This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, your pop culture home.
Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard, not the billiards. It was
billiards room.
Come on already. Come on, we call it the
Place to Be.
The Place to Be, yes, the Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nations, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
D'Lo Brown interfered with a frog splash and hit it on Severin, getting some revenge.
I know.
What the hell was it? What was that laugh? It was like an old cartoon fucking Hanna-Barbera dog or something. It was like Snidely? Was that the fucking dog that laughed like that?
AR's got a little more time than I do to sit and actually rewrite a whole show.
This is the third time you said it to me today now. I'm really curious.
Well, I'm not saying that you have nothing to do. I'm just saying
you're curious
day,
how. I'm curious how I have more free time than
no,
you.
No, I'm gonna report.
What does that mean?
Well. I don't know.
I know it's been a rough, and I know you said this long, grueling podcast schedule.
Oh, for fuck's sakes. Are you guys just joking around for the next hour?
Did you say D'Amato, late 20s, 30s?
I was being...
And you included yourself in that as well?
I was being nice to him. I am still technically in my 30s.
I think they might hit a shock wall.
What the fuck is
shock wall?
Wall?
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
He's going to fall through the shock wall.
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself. PTB Nation, let me know what
you're
doing.
Our opener.
To do worse than Josh Richard. Show you how the refugees do. Yeah, behold, this my old manifold on your rhymes. Two MCs can't occupy the same space at the same time. It's against the laws of physics. So we bet your sweet dreams break up like rhythmics. Rap rejects my tape deck, rejects projectile. Whether Jew or Gentile, I rank top percentile. Many styles, more powerful than gamma rays. My grandma pays like Carlos Santana plays black magic. Woman. So while you human, I'm consuming mango juice under Polaris. You just embarrassed, cause it's your last tango in Paris. And even after all my logic and my theory. Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one only Place to Be Podcast. I'm your co-host Justin Rosero, coming at you live on this Tuesday evening. Have all kinds of sports going on, including, of course, Game 4 of the ALDS between the Red Sox and the Rays. But we're not here to talk sports tonight. Well, maybe. A little bit of sports entertainment. Because we are back inside the Vintage Vault, and let me bring in my PIC, Mr. Scott Criscola. And Scott, we have a very interesting show to talk about tonight.
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. Welcome to episode 259 of the Place to Be Podcast. Is it weird, JR, to not be doing a vault in October and not be having one eye on the Yankee game?
All right. Yeah, I guess.
I know. Of course, earlier today, the Tigers forced a game 5, correct? Last time I looked.
Yes, they did.
They forced a game 5 out in Oakland. Yep. And of course,
Jordan
Red Sox
looking can stop whining for one night.
Yes. And of course, the Red Sox looking to finish Tampa off. We'll see if they do. And then tomorrow night, winner take all in St. Louis between the Cardinals and the Pirates. Go Buccos.
Yeah, looking forward to that one.
Yes. All right. But we have a weird, we have a reunion, JR, tonight inside the vault. Maybe he's not in. I don't smell Cheetos.
Do you smell midgets and cheese, whatever it is?
Hey, what is going on here?
Beef and cheese or whatever the hell the stupid movie he quotes from. Tonight, JR, we're going to be in pretty warm weather to celebrate a reunion, a championship family reunion.
Still don't know.
see only what I let you see. You know only what I allow you to know. You feel exactly what I want you to feel. Stone Cold Steve Austin. Rules of change. This is a new game. When you cannot survive, when you cannot win. Tonight, Austin. Game. Tonight, Austin. Game.
All right, I got a lot to say, but we'll save it. Go ahead.
I do too. I got a lot of. I have a lot of.
I can imagine.
Pros and cons. No, I have some cons too. But I actually have. I thought a lot about it today, JR, as I was rewatching the show, and I have a lot of outside the box theories that I think might be pretty interesting. So tonight, of course, inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you the 2000 Survivor Series, which is one that you know. It's funny of the 12 pay per views in 2000. This is one a lot of people forget. Or don't think about, or may not have an opinion of, because it just kind of happened. As big as the storylines were, a lot of people never seem to wrap their heads around it. A lot of people remember the fall in general. A lot of people forget.
Well, especially because, as we'll see, a lot of the build to this show, it was going on, but the major stuff happened like in the last 2 weeks leading to the show. So it wasn't like a crazy build. Mm-hmm. And it's some hefty stuff that happened in those two weeks. But it is an odd show. It is.
Very weird.
For a couple reasons.
Yeah, tough to wrap your head around. But I got a lot of good theories I'd like to think, and some outside-the-box thinking about some of the stuff that went on. So, all right, November 19th, 2000, live from the Ice Palace, new building in Tampa, Florida. Different than where we were, JR, 5.5 years earlier at the 1995 Royal Rumble, which was, I believe, the last time we were in Tampa. We were in George Steinbrenner's winter condo. That was, of course, at the Sun Dome, which is on the campus of University of South Florida. This, JR, brand new building. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the history of the Ice Palace.
Broke ground in April 1994, opened October 20th, 1996, owned by Tampa Sports Authority. General contract, of course, is Hunt Morse Diesel, in case you were wondering. Capacity for hockey, 19,204. Wrestling, 19,000 even. And the tenants are few, but we have the Tampa Bay Lightning of the NHL, the Tampa Bay Storm of the AFL, still playing there, and the Republican National Convention, 2012, was held there.
Yes, it was. Yep. And the name will change, of course, and we'll be back in this building in the next, I think, 6 or 7 years.
But well, did you know in 2009, Britney Spears performed here, the Circus, starring Britney Spears tour. It was notable for a wardrobe malfunction, and a remark... Okay, my pussy's hanging out of this fucking, whatever the mic cut off at that point, and she performed I'm a Slave for You. You get it all here in the Vintage Vault.
I bet you Vince was at that show. I'm sure Claire was in the front row.
Does anyone have a DVD of this?
Please respond. Your attendance, you said 19,000 for wrestling, slightly less, 18,602. Interesting. Well, Thanksgiving time.
Daddy, where's my pussy hanging out?
That's hanging out because you're weighing 950 pounds. That's my all right, the buy rate, a buy rate in even one, and your announcers, of course, the voices of the Attitude Era. Good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. What do we have on Heat that night? I know I remember they talked about it during the show.
Yeah, we had one match. Kind of weird, because one of the guys was working double duty because of it. And that's Val Venus, Mr. Rhymes with Penis, of course, with the Right to Censor, and Edge and Christian in his corner, defeated Jeff Hardy with Matt Hardy, the Dudley Boys, and Lita in his corner. So this is a little bit of a preview of the elimination match to come, although Val wasn't in that match. So Val kind of thrown in here to give him something to do.
Yeah.
But yes, the RTC picks up the win to stay hot. We have a lot to talk about the RTC, a lot going on.
Yeah, they're all over the show. Yeah, for the first time since they were formed, they're in multiple matches.
Right,
I believe,
and all kinds of stuff regarding gold and whatnot. Yeah.
Oh, that's definitely cranking out of the VKM limo. No doubt about that. Claire bopping his head, like pounding Ciroc. All right, let's get to the opener, which I like.
Ciroc.
Ciroc. All right, six-man tag. You have the team of, still kicking around, the team of TNA, Test, and, of course, Albert, and their valet, the voluptuous Trish
TNA,
Stratus.
Of course, as we always clarify, that is the tag team.
Yes.
Not the promotion, TNA.
No.
Oh, that'd be something if it was the entire promotion in Trish Stratus.
At that time in 2000, well, they weren't around, but at the time, maybe, who would have better work rate? Who knows? All right, taking on a pretty unique team here, you have the World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Champion. You can be sad when we can't play it anymore.
Yeah, very sad. We're coming up on it quickly, actually.
I know, yes. I know, it comes up out of the blue. Of course, Steve Blackman is your hardcore chase. Still in a role, JR. And getting pretty good pop still, actually.
The Scourge of the Secret Santa.
Yes. He was getting still pretty good pop still.
Oh, yeah, of course. Still great in this role. The 2000s, I guess you can argue, it's probably been his best year, pay-per-view-wise, anyway.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. His only bad moment was that horrendous... Deer and Headlights thing at Unforgiven. That's probably his only weird moment. Well, but even the head cheese stuff was funny. So he was either funny or he was, being a killer.
You got a WrestleMania payday. I mean, something you probably wouldn't have expected.
Doesn't matter what
before.
You're doing in it. Exactly. You're getting a paycheck. Crash Holly, former World Wrestling Federation Hardcore Champion, and a newbie. I guess another cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about it,
Jay. Cousins. Molly Holly.
What?
Portrayed by Nora Greenwald, had trained under Dean Malenko in Tampa, in this very Ice Palace. Bounced around the independent circuit, even did a job duty for both the WWF and WCW before she reached the big time. She got her first major break in late 99 when she debuted as Miss Madness in WCW, as part of Randy Savage's bevy of women. Behind the scenes, Molly and Medusa trained the other women at the power plant. After Savage had turned on Miss Madness, she turned face and went by the name Mona. She had brief feuds with Medusa, Little Genie, and Asia, and also battled independent female wrestlers who were brought in just to wrestle her. WCW released her in August of 2000 as a cost-cutting move. She was quickly scooped up by the WWF and sent to the Memphis territory, where she was christened Lady Ophelia and became a valet for William Regal. She remained in the role till November 6th when she debuted as Molly Holly, a third Holly cousin, and the victory here is her first televised win. Should also mention, this feud came about because Crash had been deemed to be in charge of the APA's office while they were out rehabbing and healing up from their assault last month by TNA.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
TNA came in and messed the office up. They took it over, and this is where we got the TNA PA stuff, where Trish had the TNA PA right in the middle of her bosoms. And it was actually some pretty funny skits they had going on where they were straightening up the office, and they were trying to make it neater, and Trish had like an apron on, and Albert kept trying to drink a beer, and Tess kept giving him a Diet Coke, and he wouldn't let him eat any of the candy out of the candy jar and all kinds of stuff like that. So Crash kept trying to stand up for his buddies, and they kept feuding and fighting. And finally, Blackman got involved to help Crash out. And then, of course, Molly here as his cousin steps in as well. So,
I really liked this match. I thought the Tampa crowd was pretty good from the start. The moment of two later on, they're in and out, but I felt like they were in it for the whole show. I liked Molly, another added pretty face. I always had a thing for Molly right from the beginning.
Do you think she would have been better suited, though, to come in with Regal? I mean, she's good in this role, but do you think it's odd that they aborted that so quickly and put her here?
I remember reading that Miss Ophelia Lady Ophelia was getting over in Memphis, too. So I'm a little surprised, considering Regal was over at the moment here, and we'll talk about him later. I was a little surprised, but I thought it would have been cool to have a girl in this whole Holly family thing.
Yeah, and she was good in the role as the kind of pure, naive, innocent Holly cousin.
Yes, and smiling, we'll happy-go-lucky.
Really with next year.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And,
now she instantly, I mean, climbs the ranks as she may already be the best worker of the women's division.
Yeah.
Depending on what you thought of Lita's style. But, Jackie obviously was still kicking around pretty good in Ivory as well. But Molly instantly jumps up to the top of the heap here in the women's division.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And a lot of the division really needed her, too, because it was getting a little thin talent-wise. But we'll talk about some of the more talented ones. Two of them would wrestle each other later on. Trish was getting there. To her credit, she was in ideal situations in the sense that She was protected a lot. She wasn't in. She hadn't been in a match really by herself yet. So she was able to kind of have her hand held. But that was okay. That was okay. It's amazing when we look back and think about TNA. You know, were they abused or were they – no, that's not the right word. Were they forgotten? Were they like the black sheep of tag teams?
No, because they were still getting a good push even at this point. Yeah. You know, involved with this whole APA thing. And they were getting a lot of TV time, taking over The Office. And, you know, a lot of it may be because of Trish. That wouldn't surprise me, but
but with all the stuff going on, not really not one title shot.
No.
Weird. Because they were – I thought they were a good team.
Me too.
But again, just, 2000. Maybe they were – you know what? They might have been a year too late. Because yeah, I bet they'd have been really good in 99.
Oh, definitely. And also, you wonder if they got kind of bumped by the RTC a little bit. You know, we kind of remember we go back, always tell the story about the Nasty Boys and all that stuff. And, you know, getting bumped around with the Natural Disasters and all the other heel teams. And you really wonder if – and Power of Glory. And you really wonder how much the RTC's rise kind of affected TNA. Because maybe they would have been put in that role to kind of freshen things up.
Good point. Yeah. Good match. As JR mentioned, Molly gets the win. She pins Trish with a sunset flip. A little over 5 minutes. Nothing offensive. Good start to the show. Obviously, as we head to the Attitude Era, one thing, JR, we talk about whether traditions get thrown out the window in scenarios like this. But they do put their share of multi-tags, even if they're not Survivor matches.
Right.
There are a couple of them tonight, and we'll get to them. But at least there's a lot of multi. I like that.
Do you think they could have added? You think they should have added two more to this person. One to make it 4-on-4?
One of each. Well, who was floating around aimlessly?
Well, there's a match later. We'll get to where maybe those two guys could have been here.
I think I know where you're going. I think.
Okay. See where we get there.
But yeah, probably. But still a good match. Solid opener. Nothing, you know, nothing offensive. You're not offensive, Art. Never have been, never will be. But Steve Blackman and the Hollies win the match when Molly pins Trish in a little over 5 minutes. Okay, backstage, your World Wrestling Federation champion. No music. I have a special song saved for later. Kurt Angle, of course, winning it at No Mercy. Sitting backstage, talking with his boys, E&C. Edge and Christian celebrating after their matches tonight, what they're going to do. Edge and Christian trying to make up excuses, JR, because we all know who Edge is or Kurt is facing later tonight. And Edge and Christian are trying to avoid having to get involved. They don't want to be involved. They're trying to get themselves uninvolved. Well, you book this. But Kurt says he doesn't need any help. He has things under control.
You guys and your crazy antics.
We'll talk about Kurt later. All right. Another match that I think I like more now that I watched it today than I probably maybe the last time I watched it. Our first Survivor Series match of the night pits, for the first time together, I think, in a match in a few months. And that is the official team known as the Radicals.
Mm-hmm.
With the awesome, I'd say some JR, the last 6 months of 2000 was an incredible run for theme music.
Yes, I agree.
Because we have an awesome debut in this match. Of course, we're talking about Perry Saturn, your World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Champion, Eddie Guerrero, your World Wrestling Federation Light Heavyweight Champion, Dean Malenko. I believe he's still the Light Heavyweight Champion. And, of course, the head of the Radicals, technically, in my opinion, the head of the Radicals, Chris Benoit, who debuted his first real awesome t-shirt. Which you'd see later in the show. Remember, JR, there was that one that actually had the broken bone on the front?
Yes.
I thought that was a cool t-shirt. I always liked that t-shirt. I forgot what was on the back. Oh, you didn't know, you better call somebody. The D-O-double-G-A-K. Quick, get rowdy, rowdy.
Come on. Yeah, get rowdy. We got to move some dangs.
Get rowdy, 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 rowdy. All right.
Well, move some dangs.
Thanks.
I'm gonna move.
Wonderful vocabulary. All right. Obviously, you recognize one of the voices, and that was, of course, my boy, the D-O-dub-dub-dub-double-G, Road Dogg. Dressed very different. He has now washed away his Degeneration X colors, neon green, officially dead. And who's that other guy singing? Allow me to tell you.
You want to do it now?
His real name.
Okay.
Oh, well, we could.
Go ahead.
Yeah. His name is Ron Killings. You're wondering who he is. Had a rough life growing up. His dream was to earn enough money to rent a recording studio and produce a debut album of rap. JR, what do you think he did to raise that money? Think he had a paper route?
I'm going to say he worked at a hospital.
You think he was like a nurse's aide or like a candy striper?
He was like an orderly.
Orderlies? Like the Fat Boys?
Yes.
Orderlies? No, he did.
By the way, can we digress for one moment?
Yes.
I feel like it doesn't get talked enough about how there was another Dr. Dre.
Yeah?
No. Like there was the Dr. Dre we know, Chronic.
Yes, there was.
But then there was a Dr. Dre before that Dr. Dre. Now, you were more into the scene back then before I was around. Do you know anything about this other Dr. Dre?
Mm-hmm. Well, this other Dr. Dre was one half of the awesome co-host of, I believe it was YoMTV Raps with Ed Lover. And I don't know, he was on the show. I don't remember him singing much, but he was a prominent MTV personality.
Okay, so he was an actual rapper. He was just
no, he wasn't. He was a TV personality. I mean, obviously, the main guys I listened to back then were NWA and
of course, obviously,
you know,
why would anyone
and Naughty by Nature, and you know.
So it looks like this other Dr. Dre had Doctor spelled out.
Yes,
and
yes,
had the little tilde on the end of the E.
Yes, little tilde or accent or whatever. Yeah.
Yes, best known for being the co-host of YoMTV Raps. You're correct.
Yes, and he's also I believe he still does a show on one of the Sirius channels.
Ed Lover does.
Backspin.
It's not Dr. Dre. Ed Lover has a great show. Anyone's a fan of old school rap and hip hop, Ed Lover's show. I think it's from like five, either 4 to 7 or 5, something like that, every night. Mm-hmm. And I listen to a lot on the way home. His show's really good. He plays a lot of good tunes, and he's pretty funny. He gets into his little preaching and tells the stories. And
I think they re-air it. One thing about Sirius XM, they re-air all their shows. So it's probably, again, like 10 to midnight or something. So,
yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to derail us too much. But I kind of, when I saw the Dr. Dre name, because there was a song by him, though. I swear he did a song. Yeah, hip-hop group, original concept, straight from the basement of Cooley High. Was their best-known track was Pump That Bass. Former DJ for
Beastie
Boys.
Oh, I remember that song. I remember that song.
So he did a lot. So I thought he was part of it because of this. I saw a song on Backspin by him, and that's what made me think of it. How we don't hear enough about that.
No,
Dr.
No.
Dre, T Money, Rapper G, Easy G, and Wildman Steve.
Yes. Yep. But of course, the other Dre is the one that is more prominent. Chronic, great album, fantastic album. All right, but Dr. Dre didn't loan Ron Killings money. Ron Killings did what anybody would do to earn a little grub. He dealt drugs the American way. He was being just short of the necessary funds. He was going to do one last big score.
Sounds like a movie.
Yeah. One last big deal to get him over
the
top.
He was just short of the funds to move some things.
Yeah. But he got tipped off, and he was put in the clink.
Pretty sure this is the storyline from Notorious, but go ahead.
Then he joined Bad Boy Records.
And then D-Rock took the fall.
Yes. And then he was killed in Vegas after a fight. No. Okay, so he was in jail, released from prison. He ran into promoter Jackie Crockett, who tried to talk him into becoming a wrestler. Killings turned him down to focus on music. Dumbass. Now he was robbing drug dealers to help pay the bills. Who was his spiritual guidance during this time of his life? Stupid idiot. After finding little to no success in music or killing drug dealers, he called Crockett back and said he was finally interested in wrestling. So he trained with Manny Fernandez, Raging Bull, for 3 years. Made his debut for NWA Wildside in 1999, I think, isn't that the Northeast promotion?
NWA Wildside.
Isn't that the one in the Boston area? Like the one Adam Pearce? I'm not sure. In 1999, under the name K-Crush, he ended up earlier this year. After the other half of the New Age Outlaws, Billy Gunn, went down with an injury, what was it, in like late August, I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Road Dogg realized that being a singles guy was not as easy as it was cracked up to be.
All right, before
Billy, 1999.
Before Chad Campbell punches his computer, NWA Wildside is based out of Cornelia, Georgia, with an office in Atlanta.
I moved it like 14 states away. He's already having a shitty day, Chad, in the sports world. So
It was open between September 99 and April 2005.
Okay. So
they had produced 300 consecutive weeks of TV.
Wow.
Bill Behrens, the owner, accepted a job with WWE.
Oh, I know that name, Bill Behrens. Mm-hmm. Chadley, find the tapes.
Wildside was replaced by NWA Anarchy.
Because Wildside was a little too soft.
Yeah, step it up.
Anarchy sounded more mean. All right. So Billy Gunn obviously got hurt, and Road Dogg that his partner realized the year before that being a singles wrestler is not all it's cracked up to be. He requested to be in a new tag team. The Bookers called up Killings, renamed him K-Quick. And he and Road Dogg recorded a rap song called
Get Rowdy! Gonna move some bangs.
Which they would sing on their way to the ring. He debuted a couple weeks before, actually the week before, mm-hmm. the go-home Raw on the 13th. He attacked William Regal, who was facing Road Dogg.
I think he actually may have showed up on Heat the night before, but this was his first big-time debut.
Big time, yeah. Yep. I like this move. Road Dogg's just not a singles guy. He just doesn't have that.
He looks so stupid in those overalls.
Oh my god, he looked like an idiot. He looked like an emaciated Godwin.
This is my problem with Road Dogg is he came across as like he just looked lame. Like when he was with Billy, it was kind of like, all right, these guys have been doing the thing, whatever. It kind of made sense. Or even X-Pac, they were. But then you bring up this young guy, and instead of Road Dogg acting like a mentor to him. He's kind of trying to, like, it almost was like a dad trying to be cool with his son or something. This is really weird. I don't know. It was like K-Quick is out there rapping, and he kind of connects with the fans, and you go, fucking old man Road Dogg in his overalls stomping around. I don't know. It was an odd fit, I thought. I didn't think it really meshed well.
Well, I knew that, I don't think there was any question that he needed a tag team partner. He wasn't a singles guy. Never was, never
Yeah,
was.
And I like the idea of him being the one that, allowing Road Dogg to work with him and develop him. I just thought they should have set it up as more of a mentor-mentee mm-hmm. situation and less of two buddies on the corner rapping.
Maybe they should have done a storyline where Road Dogg was going to help him fund his recording studio. Well, they could have done that later in the year, but earlier in the following year. So anyway, they're in this match with the Radicals. China, who's now just, she's kind of dwindling down her storyline with ex-boyfriend, and current Intercontinental Champion Eddie Guerrero. And another, well, not debut. But...
I will admit to have listened to the song way too many freaking times in the years 2001 and 2002.
You're not the only one. I actually listened to it 3 times today.
We used to rock Volume 5 many times on our car rides, and this was one of our favorite songs on the album.
Yes, that is, of course, the new entrance theme for No Longer Mr. Ass. Thank God.
Well, what's funny, Scott? I kind of forgotten this back in the vagaries of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
He actually lost the Mr. S name. He didn't just switch. He had He had a match with the RTC. And part of the agreement was that if he lost, he was no longer allowed to call himself Mr. Ass because it was vulgar.
Mm-hmm.
So he lost, and he lost the name. So they actually spent a couple weeks trying to come up with a new nickname, and Billy G was the working one for a while. They were calling him Billy G.
Billy G! Bow, bow, wow! That might have been made it for a funnier song, but...
Now, there's a couple options. You could end with Billy D, as in Billy D. Williams, right?
As in Lando Calrissian?
Yes.
I don't know how that gone. That would have gone over.
My name is Billy G!
I don't know. When it comes to him, I think anything would have been good. But he is still wearing... He's still wearing tight... Thank you.
Billy G is Kevin Kelly's best friend. He's always hurt. He can't get over on his own.
Did you loan that to Vince? He is still wearing a tight.
I was expecting he was more like a smoking gun.
Damn, God wins. Then I won. Sonny and everything went down the toilet.
And then I broke my neck. But that storyline was quickly forgotten.
He is still wearing tights with lips on
them.
Then
came the honky tonk man, and that went nowhere else.
You know who needs to? You know who we need to get? We need to get our man Josh. We need Josh Richard to sing the new Billy Gunn song.
Oh yeah.
We need to get Josh. Maybe he could wear that. He could wear that nice wig again. Who was that guy that? Remember the guy who played the guitar?
You should have found Billy Gunn.
Huh? Where's the guy that played the guitar? We have to find him. Part of that Hillbilly Jim duet. Where's the guy?
That's right. Yeah. He's around somewhere.
Where's he around somewhere? We'll find him. But yes, incidentally, Billy Gunn's still wearing tights with lips on him, if you look closely. Still lips on him.
Billy G is such a jobber.
That would have been a great t-shirt. Billy G is ... in the back. Such a jobber.
He choked away his fucking King of the Ring.
Losing bad to The Rock with a fat ass in his face. Oh, brother. Okay. So anyway, he's in this match too. So just to recap, because it took us forever to do the intros, the Radicals taking on Billy Gunn, the Road Dogg, K-Quick, and China.
And now the Radicals came quickly back together here. They had obviously been separated. They slowly came back together. First, it was Malenko and Benoit started kind of hanging out. Malenko's helping him. Mm-hmm. And then Saturn got involved. Mm-hmm. And then finally, the final week, Eddie got involved and helped Benoit. I think he just helped him win a match. So, of course, the feud here involves mainly China and Billy G, still feuding with Eddie, of course. And Benoit had actually kind of got nasty here, too. He had put China in the crossface on one episode and while Malenko and Saturn beat the shit out of Billy. And so a lot of heat, actually, behind this one. And the Radicals, who are now fully formed as a unit, and they're involved in many other storylines, which we'll get to later.
Yes.
But here, they're reunited. Did you like bringing them back together?
Yes, I did.
So you didn't feel like it was going backwards?
No.
Okay.
No. Because they were always linked.
Well, not
they
really.
Were all year.
Not. That's just like May or so when they had the three way with Saturn, Malenko, and Eddie, and they had their issues. They haven't really been related at all since then.
Yeah. I mean, maybe. I guess on camera in the storylines, but I was okay with it. I mean, it was.
You didn't see it as like a step back for Benoit at all. Do you almost feel like it was like a year before when Triple H went back to DX in a way?
Almost like a reboot. Not a reboot, but almost like a reset a little bit. You know, he had lost some big matches. He lost the match at Fully Loaded to Rock. He did beat Jericho at SummerSlam, but then he lost in the four-way at Unforgiven, and then he lost to Triple H at No Mercy. So he needed to kind of – it was almost like a reboot to remind people that this guy is an incredible technical wrestler and trying to use the right adjective.
All right, Scott. Well, just because we live for this stuff, the Red Sox loaded the bases with no outs. Jeremy Hellickson yanked in the top of the second already.
Jesus.
And the Rays got out of it with a strikeout and then a line drive double play where they doubled up the guy off second. So bottom of the second, nothing.
Big spot there for John Farrell's guys. Not happening. Interesting. All right. So
I don't think there's actually much to talk about this match. I think we spent a lot of time on the build to it and the characters involved, but the match itself is really nothing. It's kind of a radical showcase. Saturn eliminates China after Eddie cracks her with the belt. Billy pins Eddie, kind of setting up maybe a future IC title match, because don't forget, Eddie's still your IC champ here. Billy's still gunning for that title. Benoit beat K-Quick with a German, and then Saturn tapped out Road Dogg with the Rings of Saturn. Billy gets another win, pins Dean Malenko with the Famouser, and then Benoit pins Billy after Saturn blocks the suplex and pins his leg down. So Saturn and Benoit are your survivors. And then they actually get a big beatdown after the match where the Radicals beat the shit out of them. So I thought that was cool, too. So this was really just a reestablishment of credit, kind of reload the credit on the card for the Radicals and reestablish them as just badasses. Yep, and these are four people on the other side that could afford this kind of loss.
Yeah, I don't think it's that big a deal. The Rings of Saturn, trying to remember. Was it a submission move? It wasn't, right? It was a simple suplex kind of move, right? Because he pinned Road Dogg.
Oh, maybe we have that wrong then. No, the Rings of Saturn is definitely a submission hold.
Okay, then that's not what he used. No, then he did. No, then we're right then, because he didn't. It was a pin. It wasn't a submission. He didn't tap.
Was it the three-handed, moss-covered family credenza?
I think it was. Something of that nature. No, it was a pinfall. It was definitely a pinfall. Yeah, I mean, the match itself is nothing. It's a showcase for Benoit to kind of, like I said, I think it was him to kind of reset Benoit.
Yeah, and also I think to set up Billy as an IC contender.
Yeah,
he's the one that he got the most shine on that team.
Yeah, yeah, the other guys were just in China. China, you can tell the China Eddie thing. Eddie got it over on her one more time.
Yep.
So she's done, at least in this feud. It's time for Eddie to move on to other things. So yeah, that was it. I mean, it was just good to have a Survivor match on, but it wasn't anything, you know, earth shattering.
But my head is in a big girl's ass at SummerSlam 99.
But I'm not a smoking gun.
But Sonny is not the one.
All right. So after the match, we're in the parking lot of the Ice Palace, and Lillian Garcia waiting for the arrival of Rock. We'll talk about what he's doing tonight in a moment. He finally shows up. He...
I don't know!
Exactly. And Lillian doesn't either, and she just walks by. He blows her off. So he's not in a good mood. We'll tell you why. All right. This next match has one of the most laughable storyline starters ever.
Yeah, but it's not as bad as you may think.
No, it's not. Nope. Okay. You just took you took the second half of the.
Because this is one of those ones that always gets me. It's like the who raised the briefcase and that like stuff that is kind of become a running joke, but it kind of was actually more to it than the legend allows.
It was one of those people enjoyed the joke and didn't want to bother
thinking
about it anymore. They just want to laugh at the joke. But that's their problem. That's fine. All right.
It's their prerogative.
Their prerogative. Bobby Brown? There we go. Wow. Hey, I'm enjoying this walk down hip-hop memory lane while we're doing this. We should have Shade 45 or whatever the Eminem channel is on Sirius on right now. All right.
A lot of anger on that channel.
It is. Well, yeah. Backlash. I like Backspin. And
yeah, you know what upsets me? There's actually a great internet channel, Fly.
Yes.
And it's not on the rate on the Sirius radio, though. Straight up like mid to late 90s hip-hop, which is awesome stuff. And that's only on the internet channel.
Yeah, I actually was looking at it today. I didn't get a chance to listen to it, but it is on the internet channel. And then there's the other channel, not Shade 45. What's the other one? There's another one.
Yeah, there's a third one.
There's a third one. I can't remember what it is. It's good stuff, though.
That one's like more current. The Shade is Anger, and then Backspin's the older stuff.
Backspin's like way older, like Heavy D and the Boys and that kind of thing. Yeah. Passed away the last couple of years. Very sad, Heavy D. All right. So the match we're talking about, the feud involves him and Y2J, Chris Jericho. Before we get to the Bill JR, do you feel he's floating around just as bad as Benoit was coming into this show?
Yeah, but he's been involved in some heady stuff, but he hasn't really been like the main proponent. We had that awful SummerSlam clusterfuck with The Undertaker. Where his mask ripped off and he scampered away. And then he was involved in the Unforgiven four-way, but it was kind of the fourth man in there just to kind of fill space. And then he was involved in a couple of matches on TV. Like, he was in the four-way to determine the number one contender here. But other than that, yeah, not much going on. The heel turn really killed his momentum. And, you know, it was a result of Big Show being too fat to do anything.
Yeah. What about Jericho?
Oh, yeah, Jericho, I thought, too, has lost a little bit of momentum since the SummerSlam match with Benoit. You know, he had a little feud with X-Pac, but definitely kind of de-pushed a little bit. And, you know, this feud here, I think they just saw two guys that needed something to do. They hadn't really been programmed yet together, so it's kind of a fresh matchup. Odd start, though. They're backstage. Jericho accidentally spills a cup of coffee on Kane. Kane gets pissed off and assaults him. But that really wasn't... I mean, that was kind of the genesis of him getting mad, but that kind of lit a fire under Kane because he got pissed off about how all he wanted to be was accepted by the beautiful people like Jericho and the fans, but he never could because of his disfigurement. And the spilt coffee was just a reminder of that. Kane laid beatdowns on Jericho in the ensuing weeks, including one nasty spot where he threw him through a window backstage, and Jericho was all bloodied. So the coffee spilling is kind of the spark, but it was really more than that. It was more about Kane's kind of fragile psyche and ego, not being able to handle like wise-ass pretty boys like Jericho kind of getting all the shine when he gets nothing.
Yeah.
To me, that was more of the what lied here. I mean, the coffee thing, they probably could have even went without it. It was kind of goofy, but you know, Jericho made a bunch of jokes about Kane being burnt and all that kind of stuff, and that's what Kane really took offense to. So if you look past the one cup of coffee spilling, I thought there was a little bit more to this than meets the eye at first.
Yeah. Yeah, there was. And it really, there's a lot of continuity here, because what you're seeing now is kind of a continuation of the feud from earlier in 2000, before the whole Taker came back and kind of dragged Kane down with him, involving his fragile psyche from, you know, the X-Pac Tory thing, and, you know, his psyche and his ego bruised, and it kind of continues here.
Yep.
So the continuity wise, this is really good. But the only thing everybody wants to mention is, how does a feud start over a cup of coffee?
Right.
That's all people want to talk about.
Yeah, there's more to it than that.
The fact of the matter is there's a lot of continuation here from earlier in the year when Tori turned on him, and X-Pac, his best friend, turned on him, his girlfriend turned on him. And in the end, you know, he's alone again.
Right.
That's why he turned on his brother, I guess, and that's where we get that guy.
And that really just fucked it up. I thought there was a lot more depth to him and a lot going on in the summer. Yeah. And then that whole thing just really screwed him up. It's a shame they couldn't find anyone else to step in for show when he went down to OVW to fill in against Taker, instead of having to just abruptly turn Kane heel again. Right. I feel like they had really rehabbed and worked him hard, and then that just kind of deflated the balloon.
Yeah, I agree. So we have the match here.
Which, and I was actually not too much of a fan of. It was okay.
It was sloppy.
It was very sloppy.
There was a couple of moments where, like, I don't know. Do you remember the moment where, I don't know, Jericho had Kane in some kind of leg lock thing, or I don't know. I don't know if it was a figure four. I don't know what the hell they were doing, but they were both lying on the mat, and they were like, their legs were tangled, and I don't know what the hell was
straight
going on.
Straight out of the referee Rich Brawler playbook.
Yes, exactly. It was.
I mean, Jericho this time was a sloppy worker anyway. He was not one known for snug, tight work as far as crisp work. He was snug in the wrong way. But yeah, he was sloppy. When a guy like Kane, who was up and down, they just didn't really quite mesh. Of course, one line that Jericho got in that was funny. He said they should have a Sanka on a pole match, which I thought was pretty good.
That was a good line.
Yeah, it started off hot, and then it really slowed down, and then kind of picked back up. And at the end, of course, Kane survives the walls of Jericho. Mm-hmm. Jericho goes to the line salt. Kane catches him by the throat, sits up, and hits a choke slam and gets the pin. I thought Jericho kind of needed it, but Kane kind of helped him rebuild as a monster, and you could tell they were going to continue the feud. So a Kane win here is nothing. I mean, it's not like Jericho's really hurt by a loss to Kane. So
No, not at all. But it's
kind of weird to see him pinned clean, I guess.
Yeah, that is weird. And again, the match is just, it's very sloppy. There's nothing overly redeeming about it. It's not very good. So very forgettable. They do have a rematch the next month, and that one's a little better, but we'll talk about that one. All right, so we go backstage, and the Radicals, fresh off their victory or in their Survivor match, are chilling out in their swank little lounge dressing room. In comes Terry, Perry Saturn's woman, to tell them that someone has arrived, and we'll meet with them shortly. I wonder who that someone is.
They looked very very chill. They were like a mafia group backstage.
Yeah, and I love the Benoit, like,
that weird laugh.
Things for us to do.
Fucking Dr. Evil or something.
With that shirt with the broken bone on it. It was really good.
Odd stuff.
All right. We have our first title match of the evening, JR, and up next, the World Wrestling Federation European Championship on the line. Your champion, immediately awesome character. And that is, of course, William Regal, taking on a guy coming back from a big injury. And he was the reason, apparently, but he's probably the reason why Molly came in. Cousin Molly came in. That was, of course, Hardcore Holly. He had a good year in 2000.
Quite the role.
Yep, he had a match with a World Wrestling Federation title match with Triple H back in June on Heat.
Yes, that was a very good match.
It was a very good match.
One of those catalog of Triple H kind of lower card wrestler matches that he had this year.
Yep. But then, and everything was going great. And then June 30th came along on SmackDown. What happened, JR?
On the June 30th SmackDown, as you say, Kurt Angle was wrestling Hardcore Holly and smashed his arm with a moonsault. Angle's knee hit his forearm and broke it in half. And it was kind of sad because Holly was really getting over. And he was actually being seen in a way with that mid-level crew of like Benoit and those guys. He was like kind of on that level as far as like internet fandom. He had quite a little following. He had been working hard, put on good matches. That match with Triple H bought him a lot of cred. And I think people were really digging his character. So it was really like the worst possible timing for him. So he's on the shelf. He wouldn't return until the November 13th Raw, where he saved his cousin Crash from a beating at the hands of Angle. His next match would be here, and Holly's famous theme music, of course, finally debuts, and Crash and Molly took the previous Holly theme song that the whole family was using. So,
how you like me now?
Give me some fries. So this match was officially made on Heat when Holly interrupted Regal, who was giving another lesson in manners to the live audience. And Scott, this is the match I was referencing earlier when I said two guys could have been inserted into the opener. Because you could have had, of course, Holly with the Holly cousins, and Regal could have blended well enough with TNA and Trish.
Yeah.
So I thought maybe, I'm just saying, if you want to make that an elimination and carve things down a little bit, maybe have Holly pin Regal in that match or something. And you know, set up a title match at the next show. But
yeah, that could have made sense. I mean, this match was just under 6 minutes.
Yeah, 5:49, nothing much.
Going on, so nothing. Yeah, it didn't eat up that much time anyway.
Crowd didn't really get into it either.
Yeah, nah, it was average match. Nothing fancy. Holly gets frustrated and whacks Regal with the belt and gets DQ'd.
Stupid again. I mean, Holly's proven not to be the brightest of the bunch here in the world of the World Wrestling Federation.
He
routinely does stupid things like this and blows big matches.
Yes. So William Regal wins by DQ and retains his World Wrestling Federation European Championship.
Did you did you feel like they were taking like a lower level angle tacked with Regal? Like we kind of saw the angle climb up the ladder, worked well, and almost like they're replicating it just a bit with Regal.
Mm.
Having him kind of start in the low mid card and now he's going to kind of earn his titles and move up.
Yeah. No, I yes.
Because I mean, he is a guy that had the talent and the ability that they could have pushed him right up if they wanted to.
Right. But they were good, though, because I think he needed to stabilize that lower mid-card with good matches. This one is not, but the premise is, with the European title, you kind of split the mid-card in half. You have the IC half of the mid-card, and you have the European half of the mid-card. And eventually, William Regal was that good to, you know, be built up to a solid level. But it was okay to kind of stabilize the lower mid-card by having him, you know, in these feuds. I don't have a problem with it. I think it worked out well. I think the roster needed it.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly because the Radicals were being slowly inched up. So the mid-card was kind of spreading out, and there may have been some gaps, and I think William Regal was there to fill those gaps, particularly in the lower mid-card. So, I thought it worked out well. Sadly, that match is crap, but that's because Parkour Holly sucks. But
it's a little harsh. I mean, I don't think he sucked. I mean, I think he's rusty.
Yeah.
Rusty.
That's probably what it is.
But I think he's a little bit rusty coming back. No, because he was on quite a run. I'm telling you, he had a lot of. I remember it vividly. He had a lot of cred on the internet at this time.
Mm.
Like he was in that mix of guys that people really wanted to see pushed.
Mm-hmm. Matt Rotella was not one of them.
Well, he's a fucking moron.
Well, that's true too. All right, so next we go backstage again.
This is jealous that Holly had more hair than him.
He was afraid that if he tried to dye it blonde, it would all go away.
Oh God.
Oh, could you imagine? Oh,
he should dye his chest hair.
He look like rug. A crayon.
Fucking ruggy ass. I mean, it honestly looks like he buys shirts that have chest hair like made as part of the shirt. Like that's how fucking bad it is.
Maybe that's why the shirts he has to buy are three sizes too big. Maybe it's just go. They're a little tight. They're quite uncomfortable because it's like he has a second shirt on. Fucking he has a shirt of cloth and a shirt of hair.
Fucking merkin.
All right. Trish Stratus visits your World Wrestling Federation champion, Kurt Angle, and she asks Kurt if she wants any assistance in his match with The Undertaker tonight.
Oh, no thanks, Trish. You can tell Test and Albert. Thank you, but I'm all set.
Was that making Kurt, like, just even better?
Oh, yeah, it was great. He's so aloof, but, I mean, it's funny because he's just really focused on his match, and, you know, he's got this plan in place. He doesn't want any help. And, of course, just completely oblivious to what Trish's true intentions are.
Yeah, I agree. All right. We have our first match of the night that really digs into the heart of the show. Of
what look what you did, you little jerk.
And just to update you, we head to the bottom of the third. Nothing still.
Okay. How's the crowd there? Are they getting into it?
Yeah, they look pretty rowdy to me. I mean,
okay.
They're getting rowdy.
They're getting rowdy.
They're going to move some bangs.
Move some bangs. All right, let's dig into the first match that really digs into the meat and potatoes of this pay-per-view.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know what happened both before and after No Mercy. We all know about Rikishi admitting that he was the one behind the Crown Vic.
I did it for The Rock.
That ran over Stone Cold Steve Austin last November at the Survivor Series in Detroit. First, he admitted that he ran over for The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
Then he tried to implicate The Rock, saying, mm-hmm. No, Rock, I didn't do it for The Rock. He told me to do it.
You did it, you son of a bitch.
He's the accomplice. And then, of course, at No Mercy.
Yes.
Yeah. And then at No Mercy, Rikishi blew two opportunities in his title match. And, mm-hmm. of course, The Rock then lost the title to Kurt Angle.
And a lot of attacks, a mm-hmm. lot of angst with these two.
Yep.
They really play up the family ties with these guys.
Yes, I like that.
JR really like plays that up. Rikishi, the week before, hit some bonsai drops on Rock. They were using a sledgehammer on him. So Rock's ribs are really targeted here. That's the weak spot on him heading into this match. Now,
one thing I want to mention, JR, yeah. speaking of family, family with these two, we mentioned it briefly at Unforgiven. Then we didn't get to it at No Mercy. But of course, the family lost a member when on October 23rd, which was the night after No Mercy. So that's why we did mention on purpose. The night after No Mercy, October 23rd, 2000, Rodney Anoa'i died at the age of 34. Of course, he was Yokozuna. He was in England, and of course, he is related to both Rock and Rikishi in some capacity. He left, of course, the WWF in 1996. After that, he kind of bounced around on the indies. The last major appearance for him was at that failed Heroes of Wrestling show mm-hmm. in October of 99. He was an estimated 760 pounds. He had not only gained the weight that he lost, but admitted he was intentionally getting bigger because he wanted to weigh between 850 and 900 pounds so he could go down as the largest wrestler ever to compete as a pro.
And then he killed himself, basically.
Pretty much. He was a member of the wrestling family. Rock and Rikishi mm-hmm. and amongst many others were among his cousins. Af and Sika were his uncles. And on October 23rd, 2000, the night after No Mercy, he died from pulmonary edema at his room in the Moat House Hotel in Liverpool, England, while on an independent wrestling tour in Europe. At the time, it was widely reported he died of health failure or a heart attack. But this was later found to be incorrect due to his lungs showing severe signs of blockage due to fluid. His weight at the time of death, 680 pounds. And, of course, he would be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame last year in Miami. Quickly, JR, before we continue on, because I know he was one of your boys, a few words on the career of Yokozuna.
Well, I think we touched on his career quite a bit when he left. But, no, I was sad. I was sad to hear that. There was always those rumors that he was going to come back. And if you remember, 97, he was going to join the Hart Foundation and all those things. And all the rumors that he was going into WCW so Hogan could get his job back and everything else going on. And that's one job that Hogan never got back. It might be one of the only ones he never got back.
Yeah, pretty much.
Nothing he could do about it. But, so, yeah, it was sad. It was definitely sad. I wish the guy could have gotten himself under control and not had this weird obsession with being the fattest wrestler ever or whatever, weird fascination he had. So I wish he could have gotten over that and got himself in shape. But, it makes you feel a little bit better. Maybe that they were looking out for a guy like Big Show at this time, although Rikishi kind of the opposite. It's almost like they were encouraging him to get fatter. But so Yoko, yeah, sad ending for Yokozuna.
Yeah, very sad. Rest in peace, PTB. He's a PTB favorite. Always have and always will be. So carried the heels for a good piece of the mid-1990s.
So I have a whole thing I want to talk about with this feud or with the Rikishi stuff, but I'm going to save it for the main event because it ties into that more.
Okay.
This match, though, I like. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was better than you would expect. Mm-hmm. Before we move on, though, mm-hmm. I do want to call out on placetobenation.com. Before every Vintage Vault episode, Scott, our boy Chad Campbell,
yes,
of course, on the We're the Big Boys Play podcast, is going to pick one match from the card. Mm-hmm. He's going to watch it. He's going to post a video on the website. and he's going to recap, do a little match review, kind of like a preview show to the Vintage Vault. So Chad's a great match analyst.
Yes, he is.
Really picks apart, you know, in a good way. Gets into kind of the deep meaning of the match, and just does a really good job at analyzing matches. So if you want to kind of read about the details of this match, you can head over there, placetobenation.com. It's called the Vintage Vault Preview. And he's going to do this every time. Every week we're going to have a vault. He's going to preview a match and put it up there. So be on the lookout for that. Usually it'll be Sunday night into Monday morning probably that he'll be posting them, because we usually do the vaults on Monday nights. So keep an eye out for those.
Yes.
So this match itself I like. You know,
I do too.
I thought it was a good showing for Rikishi. I thought it was way better than it had any right to be. The crowd was really into this one. Rock took a stink face, which is crazy. You know, you never expect that to happen. He did a really good job selling the ribs and the sternum, and King and JR really put over the injury as well. And, again, just another match I think is kind of ruined by the people's elbow. I just hate that finisher. Like, I feel like he should have hit a desperate rock bottom and kind of fell on top of him.
Yeah, I agree.
Instead of the people's elbow, but...
It took forever for him to go over and pin him, too.
Yeah.
It made it even worse.
It was kind of stupid. So after the match, Rikishi beats the shit out of him, puts the heat back on him. Did you think it was weird that Rikishi seems to be now, we're two big matches into his heel turn, and neither time he gets a win, but he kind of gets his heat back after. Does that work for you, or do you think he needed to have some victories in here? Or is he just a guy that doesn't give a fuck about winning, just wants to beat people up?
I think this storyline is supposed to be so cerebral that I think wins and losses are irrelevant here. I think he just wanted to punish and pummel The Rock. I don't think the wins and losses mean anything.
Did you feel like Rock was getting de-pushed by being in this feud?
No.
Do you think it elevated Rikishi, or do you think it?
I think it
elevated The Rock.
Delevated. No, I mean, Rock is one of those guys. I think even at this point,
Rock's, you feel though, it's like SummerSlam '99 almost.
Yeah, Rock's one of those guys you could just put anywhere. The crowd loves him, and they don't care where they don't. You know, fans like that don't care about where he is on the card, kind of thing. I think they're just happy he's there and he's in a big.
Well, do you feel like it's almost payment for his run as champion?
Little bit,
like you have to step back a little
bit. But even as we talk about in a little bit, even the title's taken a backseat tonight to the storyline, and you needed to separate this match from the other match that involves this storyline later. So I think the fact that it's here is just kind of collateral damage, because I don't think you can have the two matches that close together. But even the title takes a backseat tonight, as we get to in a couple minutes. So no, I don't think there's any. I think Rikishi needed it. I mean, winning and losing, I don't think really mattered. I still think the fans hate him for what they did to.
You think he still looks stupid in the thong?
Yeah, he does. Yeah. I mean, he comes out with that white jacket thing.
Yeah,
but
a little flower shirt.
Now we're at the point now. I think he should have been wearing tights.
I think I would have looked like the baggy like MMA boxing shorts. I don't know if he could have pulled off tights.
Without them being. I don't know how baggy they would have been on him.
Well, true, but that's kind of the look I picture him in.
Yeah, I was looking for something kind of like the head shrinkers used to wear.
Yeah, but even something that like would look maybe a little goofy. Mm. I don't know. He's just got a really big ass.
I don't know how baggy you would have made the shorts, but in any event, I agree. I think it's time. I think the outfit was gone if he was going to stay a heel. Yeah,
but yeah, I always like this one. Both guys work really hard. A lot of emotion in the match, a good storyline. The commentary was good. The crowd was good. I'm not going to say it's like a hidden gem, but it's a hidden nugget.
Yeah. One thing you have to say about The Rock, and I think at this point now of his career, he's established now as a guy that never takes a match off.
Yes.
He could have thrown this thing in the stinker.
Right. He could have worked a paint-by-numbers Rock match. But no, he really works hard. And but part of it is probably, too, because he's... You know, I'm sure he's tight with Rikishi in real life. And
yeah, he's working with family. Yeah.
Yeah, he wanted to get him over.
Yep. So, I like this match a lot. Yeah, it's not like a... I mean, we graded a 3.5 on our review, but... I mean, this isn't like, oh my God, I got to find this match. And I don't know if it's anywhere. Is it on either of his comps? I don't know. Probably not. I'll have to check out the history of WWE.com, our good friend. I don't think it is, though. I'm not bothering getting up. It's in the other room. But, I mean, it's. I don't know if this match is on any comps, but it's a good match, though. If you find it on YouTube or Daily Motion, definitely look for it. It's worth watching. You'd be presently surprised at how these guys put their boots on and work hard. So, and The Rock gets it back, but Rikishi beats the shit out of him afterwards. So. All right. Match ends. We move on. Stone Cold Steve Austin has arrived. He's got a big match later tonight. We go into the game's locker room. Triple H in the locker room with the Radicals. And, of course, Terry, who's being molested on the couch by Perry Saturn. Commissioner Mick Foley, who's a bit miffed, barges in to tell Triple H and the Radicals that the Radicals are not allowed at ringside for the match later tonight. And the match is now no DQ. Triple H is quite aloof by either of those announcements. Aloof, I say. Next, we have our, second championship match of the evening. The World Wrestling Federation women's title on the line. Your champion is new. We know who the champion was before. Tell them when the title changed.
Well, on the 10/23 Raw, the Right to Censor picked up a final member of their faction, the first female member, Ivory. Of course, remember her being the leader of D'Lo Brown's pimp ring and way back in the day. And of course,
she was a gift.
Yeah, now she was basically just doing nothing. She had co-hosted all day long and just popped around on TV here and there. Yep. She donned a conservative attire comprised of a white shirt and long black skirt, almost like a Little House on the Prairie kind of look.
Yes, kind of like a schoolgirl.
School marm. She won the women's championship on 11-2 SmackDown when she defeated Lita, Trish, and Jackie in a fatal four-way. So Right to Censor picks up some gold. Did you like the addition of Ivory to the crew?
Absolutely. Needed a woman to kind of extend. Kind of had to extend the Right to Censor out to the other division.
Yeah, and a lot of the stuff they were ranting against were stuff being done by these women.
Yep, and Ivory was the perfect looking. She was the best. She would have looked like the best prude.
Right.
No other woman on the roster would have played a prude better than her. So worked perfectly. Absolutely agree. The match is it's kind of a mess. Although Ivory it's not good. Lita looks kind of like a mess.
Well, Lita was weird at this point because she was good at like hitting spots.
Mm-hmm.
Like some high-flying spots and stuff, but she really wasn't great as like a wrestler. You know what I mean? Like she didn't put together good matches. She was kind of sloppy. Her punches were all over the place. And
right.
You know, she was exciting, and she had a lot of energy. So that carried her. Mm-hmm. But as far as like putting a match on for 5 minutes, which is pretty long for women's standards at this point, not good. And then Ivory actually potatoes her in the face and busts her eye open.
Yeah, bad too.
And yeah, she was really
pouring out her eye. Yeah.
And then Stevie comes in, gets involved, and Ivory picks up the win. So Lita was over. It didn't really matter. I think they needed to keep the belt with the Right to Censor.
Yeah, yeah.
And the blood was really the highlight here, I guess.
Yeah, it's
for
pretty bad.
Better or worse.
But Ivory hits Lita hits that Rana, and she pretty much almost kills Ivory. It's so sloppy. Yeah,
no, she was sloppy.
Yeah, not either of the women's highest moments. But Ivory, the female part of the Right to Censor, retains the World Wrestling Federation Women's Championship. We go to the back. The coach. Have we talked about the coach?
I don't know, actually.
I don't know either. I don't think he's been on much pay-per-view.
One of our other guests has talked a lot about Coach.
Yes. Jonathan Coachman. We'll just do a quickie. Jonathan Coachman was a TV sports announcer in Kansas City.
Yep.
If you remember, he was the one that was on Larry King, I believe it was Larry King, the night after Owen Hart's death. It was him, I think it was him, Jesse, and I don't remember who the other person was. I thought it was a three. It wasn't Brett. It was Jesse, Jonathan Coachman, and somebody else. And Coachman was defending the WWF and the whole scenario and everything. And ironically, later on, he'd get a job.
Yeah, I always liked the coach. From day one, seemed like a cool guy. He was very down to earth.
Yep.
And it made sense since he came from like the sports news world. He added a very good kind of serious sports take to it, but he also was a good stooge for different guys. And I thought he complimented Kevin well. And we'll talk to Kevin about him. And of course, he's gone on to much bigger things, which we'll get to down the line. But I like the coach.
Yeah, and he does this update very like sideline, Pam Oliver-ish. You know. He reports that he's in front of the Rock's locker room. The door is closed. He's dealing with trainers. He cannot breathe very well, and he is coughing up blood after, of course, the beatdown that Rikishi gave him after their match earlier. All right. Time now for your World Wrestling Federation championship match. And on a night like tonight, where we were talking about rap and everything, I was going to play a little disco for you, JR. I was going to play a little Donna Summer, but my phone just died. So guess what? I'm not singing it. We'll play it at Armageddon. But in any event,
Armageddon.
We're trying to pace the show tonight, so I will pass the song, but we'll use it at Armageddon. Anyway, Kurt Angle, of course, your champion, his first pay-per-view title defense against Big Shock, the guy that everybody has to face first when they win the title. God forbid. We're talking, of course, about the Nacho Eater, otherwise known as, of course, the Undertaker, who we affectionately used to call Nacho Gut for 2 years. How did he get this title shot, JR, besides walking into Vince's office and saying, I want a title shot?
He earned it by winning a four-way, which we kind of referenced before, on the 11-6 Raw against Kane, Jericho, and Chris Benoit. Mm-hmm. He had been off TV, remember, for a little while.
Yes.
He made his return, I think it was about a week after No Mercy, mm-hmm. and he got into a feud, a little mini-feud with the Right to Censor. Mm-hmm. Wiped them out, so no one could care about them for a little bit, of course. God forbid, right? So, yeah, he came back there and then got involved in this mix. A little disappointed that he was the one that was chosen for this match.
Of course. Why wouldn't he be?
So, heading into the show, the WWF Championship had changed hands at the last six Survivor Series.
Can I interject a moment, though? Because
sure.
They mentioned this at least a couple times, and this is where yours and my wrestling nerddom comes out. That is factually incorrect.
It is?
Yes. Because technically, there was no switch in 1998. It was vacant.
Oh, you're such a bitch.
Sounded like LaRue there. That was a very LaRue-ish factual change. But in any event, a title was won by somebody for six straight years. Going back to, I guess, the last time there was a title defense. Let's be this. Let's
He's
be
an asshole.
Well, who? Derek LaRue? Come on.
You.
The last time there was a title defense at Survivor Series in which the champion retained was? JR?
1992.
Correct. Bret the Hitman Hart retained against Shawn Michaels in one of PTB Nation's favorite lost classics. Of course, 1993, your champion, which was Yakathuma, was in a Survivor match.
Hulk Hogan, we're coming for you, nigga!
No, he wasn't in it. One of your favorite matches, JR? Foreign Fanatics.
Yes.
And the All-Americans. Mm-hmm. So, yes. So, 1992, when Bret Hart defeated Shawn, was the last time the champion went in and came out of a title defense at Survivor Series.
Well, regardless, this point is brought up throughout the show.
Yes.
It's the 11-year anniversary of Undertaker's debut in 1990.
Yep.
And the one-year anniversary of Kurt Angle's debut now. Mm-hmm. A lot of branding going on with Taker leading into the show.
Mm-hmm.
One that he talks about here, the Decade of Destruction.
Mm-hmm.
That's where that whole thing fires up because now mm-hmm. been full 10 years. Mm-hmm. The Big Dog in the My Yard. We had heard it a little bit before, but this is where it really kicks in.
Yeah.
And he did it in a big promo with Kurt saying, you're in my yard. You know, you know what that is. That rings my yard. I'm the Big Dog, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of that stuff kind of going on with Taker. And, yes, a lot of branding.
Yeah. And he's wearing, oh, you know, the other branding is, there's more branding.
Oh, God.
Dead Man Incorporated.
Ugh. Oh, that's right. Dead Man Incorporated. Yep.
Dead Man Incorporated, because he's wearing that t-shirt when, I forgot who was interviewing him. I think it was Kevin. Kevin or Coach. I don't remember who it was. One of them was interviewing was Taker, and he's wearing the Dead Man Inc. t-shirt. Yeah, it was just.
And how about this? The lower half of his body.
Oh, those hideous.
Shit.
I don't know, but he must have stole a pair of pants out of your fucking closet.
They were brutal. These
awful,
weird,
like,
shiny snake skin. Fucking
terrible.
Ugh.
They were like bell bottoms.
Right out of the Jay Hinchy collection.
Yes. Awful. Awful pants. This match is just not good. It seems very
It's weird. It's a weird match.
It's very detached. That's a word that I used in my written comments. I feel like the psychology was very detached.
Mm.
It didn't seem to mesh with what they were trying to do in the ring.
Well, Kurt was an underdog, and they were playing like he had a plan. He grabs a chair, Taker fights him off, and again, just like Fully Loaded, what pissed us off there, Taker gets a lot of visual pins. What, either the ref is down, or whatever, he's down, and Angle's tapping out, and I hate that. I just hate it. Like, to bury your champion in his first defense with a bunch of stupid fluky pins early.
Right.
I know it's Undertaker, but come on. You're trying to establish Kurt as a legit champion, and you got that shit going on. They actually get to a little good stretch, I think, once Angle takes over. He gets a nice German suplex, and Taker's working with him. Taker gets Kurt a submission hold. Edge and Christian hit the ring, distract the ref. Kurt would get pinned, but Edge and Christian save him again. So here we go. You know, two more where Kurt looks weak. And then at the end, Kurt goes out to the floor, ducks under the apron,
mm-hmm.
and then pops back out. Taker hits him with the last ride, pins him. But as he's at two, the referee stops. Taker flips out, and the referee, the announcers tease that, oh, is the referee in on this? You know, has he been bought by Kurt Angle? And then Kurt comes back in. And now there's two Kurt Angles.
What?
So one comes back in, he rolls up Taker and pins him, and he scampers off of the title, and then we see another guy, the other Kurt, kind of rehabbing in the ring and mm-hmm. Shaking out the cobwebs. And the fake Kurt was actually his brother Eric Angle, who had been working in developmental at the time. And so Eric Angle, actually, I don't know if he was there yet. I know he would, it was around this time where he got involved in developmental. This might have been the catalyst for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they did look alike, so it was kind of a cool little swerve.
Yeah, it was.
And I didn't like how Taker beat him over and over, but I didn't mind the finish because I thought it made Kurt look smart. Like, he didn't use cheap interference, like someone comes in, spears Taker, and he pins him. Like, it was a plan he set out and executed it and stole the title win. So that I was cool with. And the match itself is actually okay. I think it's better than Fully Loaded. I just wish we didn't get, like, the two or three fake finishes. But, like, one could have been okay. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. One towards the end. But to get the early ones always pisses me off because it makes it look like it's a quick win.
Right.
Like, if you get one 15 minutes into the match and then Edge and Christian come out and break it up, like, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't like the dominance, and then Angle sneaks out the win again. Like, we just saw that at Fully Loaded. So, I mean, a good win for Kurt. Glad to see him escape with the title. I don't think it made him look as strong as he could have looked.
Yeah, and at least the one thing, I guess the one saving grace about Taker in this gimmick is that you could be a little more flexible now, because, you know, you can kind of play Taker off as a dumbass because, you know, he's a normal human being now. Even though he did say, even though I don't dress like Satan, I run with the devil. You think he should be holding a PBR can? When
I know. All of a sudden, he's fucking. I guess he just really was trying to be Kid Rock. I mean, is that what it is? He's just,
yeah,
everything.
Incidentally, he still had. That's
why he didn't have a little bald midget running around with him.
Yeah, exactly. Incidentally, he still had the
American Badass
yep. theme. Yes,
hadn't switched yet.
Yeah, a lot of money Vince is paying for all this free.
Not really. Well, I mean, isn't it? Aren't you allowed to use anything you want in the stadium?
Then why didn't he? Well, yeah, I guess so.
I think it was his, like, DVD releases you have to pay for.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So that, mm-hmm. I mean, that's just a bigger deal to him. I mean, that cripples him just as much as if you had to pay in the arena. But I'm pretty sure arena music is.
That's true.
Why
has he been doing it a lot since coming back in May?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, the match is frustrating. You're exactly right. It's awfully difficult to keep the flow going. Kurt tried his best. But I enjoyed the swerve. How lucky is it that Kurt's brother looks just like him?
Well, yes, very lucky.
It's very lucky. I don't know who else you could have gotten.
Genetics.
Yes.
Genetti? Mother Nature is a mad scientist.
Yes, it is. So there you go. Kurt Angle retains the World Wrestling Federation Championship. So that was not a... You didn't get any solace from the fact he kept the title. The match itself still frustrated you.
Just that one part. I really didn't think it was that bad. Like, I don't think it's as bad as Fully Loaded. I mean, Taker sucks in the ring at this point. He's not working well. But I wasn't as annoyed here as I was at Fully Loaded. I liked the finish here, actually. I just didn't like those two or three hiccups in the middle where Taker looked to have him beat multiple times.
Right. No, it was frustrating. I agree. Okay. Our title is retained. Kurt Angle keeps it. We'll take a break here at Survivor Series 2000 down at the Ice Palace. When we come back, we got two matches left. We have one more Survivor match involving the top end of the tag team ladder. And then the main event, the match that pretty much defines this pay-per-view and creates quite a bit of debate and vitriol.
And just an update, we go to the bottom of the fourth scoreless.
Okay,
Matt Moore in for the Rays now.
Don't you find it ironic? We're actually in Tampa.
Yes,
tonight.
Coincidental, that, huh? Indeed.
Coincidental, ironic, non sequitur. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, another Survivor match and a match for revenge. First, though, a word. Because...
Billy Gunn.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
He likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Oh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
Well, there they are, our good friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. If you want nonstop old school NWA discussion, getting back to that very first Starrcade, these guys have it covered. Even the PICs have made an appearance once. We are very particular what podcasts we visit. So check out our friends Chad and Parr, Where the Big Boys Play. Their link is right on our site, placetobenation.com. Just go into the podcast menu. There they are, with the other great shows we partner with. Chad and Parr, working Where the Big Boys Play. Speaking of Place to Be Nation, that's your everyday home for your pop culture needs. At placetobenation.com, we have everything. Wrestling, sports, comics, even polls. We want your opinions as well. Every day there's something different with our top staff of writers who are experts in all fields of pop culture. From the weekly Raw review to the return of the hack, you've got everything you need. We're also working with a myriad of great podcasts, of course, besides Chad Parr. We have Grapple Talk, the fans podcast, Off the Top Rope, Answering the 10 Count, We Found New Music, and the Kings of Sport with Nate Milton. We've got everything for your listening pleasure. So check us out every day of the week at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Now, don't forget about our good friend Graham Cawthon and the history of WWE.com. He's still the top source for all argument solvers, from match results to house show cards to pay-per-view histories. Any questions you need answered, any debates among wrestling fans that need ending, head over to Graham's treasure trove of information. You will certainly find it. Need to know what the opener of Starrcade 1995 was? What was the main event of that 1988 Boston Garden house show you went to when you were 11 years old? Graham can tell you. He has WWE, WCW, ECW results, and the growing results in TNA and Ring of Honor. So for all your wrestling research needs, check out Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com. Now finally, if you want a place to just hang out, discuss all things wrestling with fellow diehard fans, check out the news and the great forums at twfnews.com. They have all the up-to-the-minute stories in WWE, TNA, and pretty much everywhere in between. They talk old school, attitude era, and even those hard-to-remember guys and shows like Waylon Mercy or In Your House Number 3. So check out all there is to see right on twfnews.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is Christopher Daniels. I'm a national treasure, an idol to millions, and I've got the rear that makes the girls cheer. And you're listening to the Place to Be podcast. Please continue, because I'm great and so are you.
Riot Nation, we be back. We are in the Vintage Vault review. We're in the midst of our review of Survivor Series 2000.
Sorry.
And we're going to take a quick moment. We have a couple pieces of business to get to. We're going to talk about PlaceToBeNation.com. And also right now, we're going to reveal the winners of the Making Strides American Cancer Society donation contest. We'll get to that momentarily. PlaceToBeNation.com, a lot of stuff going on, as always. We have the newest edition of the Grapple Talk Newswire from October 7, 2013. That's right. You can actually sign up for this and get all your MMA news right to your email box. Courtesy of Callum Luzzi, our main MMA guy.
Yes.
A really cool piece that goes hand-in-hand with the 30 for 30 tonight on the ABA. It's by Andrew Reich, The Lost Franchises. Takes a look at the Spirits of St. Louis and the Kentucky Colonels. The last second kind of teams that got bounced out of the merger from the ABA and NBA. So really cool stuff. Andrew knows his basketball stuff. If you're a basketball fan and you haven't read any of Andrew's stuff, you should be embarrassed with yourself because his stuff is as good as you'll read anywhere. When it comes to hoops, Josh Richter continued his Once Upon a Time reviews. This week's episode is up, as well as Richter and the Mailman, episode 10. Now we're past Breaking Bad, but a lot of discussion. They talk about spoilers in general. They talk about NASCAR, Facebook. They rank their favorite TV shows. They get into some weird stuff about pubic hair and Cinemax. So a lot of interesting things from Richter and the Mailman. Good stuff as always. Parv and the Doctor, huh?
Stuff we don't have time for.
Yes, of course. Parv and the Doctor is Parv, our buddy from Where the Big Boys Play, continues his trek through the history of Doctor Who. Your Raw recap from last night's up. And, of course, Chad Campbell's Vintage Vault previewing the Rock and Rikishi match. Todd Weber reviewed episode 2 of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Adam Murray, we mentioned him before, going to be doing some music stuff, but also some other weird little life topics. And this one he looks at a terrible marketing. And he breaks down and analyzes the Nissan Versa commercial, which I highly recommend this piece because it's really funny, actually. He just completely shreds this whole commercial, like, line by line. Good stuff by a very sharp-witted man. House of Horror, Friday the 13th, Part 3 by Jeremy Nichols. And, of course, if you want to relive the pay-per-view that was Battleground, you can relive through our live blog, me, Brad, and Scott. It's all there for you. A new episode of Titans of Wrestling, looking at the WWF in the November of 1979, episode 6 of that. And, of course, answering the 10 count, SmackDown recap, all there for you, all your usuals. So follow us along on PlaceToBeNation.com. We have some good stuff coming the rest of the week as well. Also, Scott, let's give a hearty plug to our friend Graham Cawthon, who actually is releasing a book.
Awesome. Incredible.
Yes, and this is going to be the first kind of, you know, obviously it's going to be multi-volume, as you can tell, because he's got a lot of stuff to cover.
Mm-hmm.
So this first one. Of course, we'll have a lot of topics covered because it looks at the history of the World Wrestling Federation from 1963 to 1989. So you can have all the dates, the cities, the ring results, all the hidden gems, the main events, and everything else, all in book form. I ordered my copy. You should go order yours. And you know what you can do, Scott? If you go to PlaceToBeNation.com, on the right-hand side, there's a link for Amazon. You click that, you go right through. And you can order Graham's book, and we get some credit. Graham gets some credit, and we're all happy at the end. And you're happy because you get this awesome book. So it's a help out Graham Cawthon. He always helps us here in Place to Be Nation. And he definitely deserves the assistance. So check that out.
Yep.
Now, finally, I want to announce some thank yous and the winners of the Making Strides contest. The top five donors will be joining us on the Survivor Series Old School Roundtable coming at you in mid-November. Top number one donator also receives a special gift from myself. But I'm going to first run through everyone who donated and say very much thank you. So, Scott, I'm going to start with you. Thank you very much.
Of course.
Ryan Schmuck, Sean Zern, Grant Owens, Steve Willey, Michael McDonald, Ben Morse, Brad Woodling, Ryan Everett, Todd Weber, Tyler Blount, Jeffrey Jehelka, Mark Clare, Callum Leslie, Mike Rude, J.A. D'Amato, Chad Campbell, and Brian Meyer. And if I miss you, I sincerely apologize. I think I got everyone. I've been trying to keep track on a separate little page here. But again, I'm sorry if I didn't have you on that list and I missed you. Please, you can call me out all you want, but I want to thank everyone who donated. There were really generous donations from all of you. And I'll just let you know, I finished it at $3,800 as an entire team
awesome.
For the American Cancer Society. So that was 20th in the States, and we had the walk this past Sunday. So top five donations.
Mm-hmm.
in no particular order, and these five will be joining us for the Old School Roundtable. Number one, Mr. Sean Zern.
Oh, okay.
Number two, our trivia buff, Mr. Ryan Everett.
Ah, okay.
Number three, another trivia buff, Mr. Ryan Schmuck.
Schmuck.
Number four, the OG of the PTB, Big Daddy himself, J.A. D'Amato.
Yes, look at that.
We'll be in the house talking some Survivor Series. Always wow. A good time. And our number one donor who receives the extra little prize, our good friend, you heard him here before on a Vintage Vault, and he'll be joining us again, smart guy, intelligent guy, Mr. Mike Rude. So
yes.
Those are the top five donors here on the Making Strides Challenge. And again, thank you to everyone. You're all top donors in my book. I know how times are tough and everything else, and I really appreciate you all scratching together some Scratch and some Skrilla and sending it my way. Into the American Cancer Society, a legitimate franchise, unlike Susan G. Komen. So thank you very much. That goes right to the American Cancer Society itself.
None of us have to wear pink shirts.
Well, yeah, you can, but
oh.
This money actually goes to cancer research and not to funding trips around the world.
And laptops. Yeah. Yes. On a side note, JR, before we continue, for those that are thinking about Graham's book, did you see how many pages it is?
I'm guessing it's about 19,000.
That might be the total of the entire series.
Okay.
This one is 806.
Yeah, this thing's a beast.
Yeah, get it.
Definitely. It's a great reference. I can't wait to have it just to right here on my little table for during these shows. I can pop it open and yep. Be like Mike Francesa reading the newspaper on air. Yeah, all right,
and
so
falling asleep.
Maybe we'll do it like when he reads the Mickey Mantle fucking autobiography under the tree with the umbrella in the summer episodes. That's what we'll start doing. I'll start reading excerpts from Graham's book. on air. All right, let's get back to the vault, Scott. We got two big matches remaining.
Yes. Okay. Our final Survivor-style match of the night, pretty much the main event one because it's got the most talent in it, is a 8-man, 4-team event. In other words, two tag teams per side.
Yep.
On one side, we have your World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions. It was kind of a back-and-forth thing. But, of course, what last talked, the Hardys were your tag team champions. Then, at No Mercy, they lost to the Conquistadors, who we knew eventually the Conquistadors were Edge and Christian. But then the next night, JR, on the 10/23 Raw, the Hardys won it back, dressed as the Conquistadors, from Edge in a handicap match.
Yeah, that whole thing is very...
it's very weird. It's
very weird. So, yeah, of course, the whole joke is that Edge and Christian were the Conquistadors, right?
Yeah.
So they win the titles as the Conquistadors. The next night, they're going to fight them. Christian says he's injured, he's hurt, he's sick. So Edge says, I'm going to go it alone against the Conquistadors. And, of course, the idea behind it was that Christian would be under one of the masks and would lay down for Edge, and they would officially win the titles because they weren't allowed to fight the Hardys anymore. Well, about a few minutes into the match... The Conquistadors go rogue, get a twist of fate, Swanton, and they unmask to reveal the Hardys, and Christian had been beat up backstage. Foley comes out and basically says, yeah, I'm going to allow last night's win, but I'm also going to allow tonight's, so therefore, your champions are the Hardy Boys.
Until
November 6th.
Yes.
When Bull Buchanan and the Goodfather picked up an upset tag team title win. So now the right to censor have more gold. We have the women's title. We have mm-hmm. the tag titles. Mm-hmm. I liked the Conquistador stuff, even though it was a little tricky and a little confusing and out there. I thought Foley explained it away well. And it was a nice little touch because Edge and Christian still pissed. And then they end up costing the Hardys the titles on the 11-6 Raw so they can get back in the title hunt because that's still the storyline that they're not allowed a match with the Hardys.
Yes. except in between those two Raws, on 10/23, between 10/23 and 11/6, on the 10/30 Raw, is a moment that will always live in iconic comedic infamy.
Yes.
Stephanie McMahon was out with the flu. So so she wasn't on camera. In fact, she wasn't at the show either. Edge and Christian and Kurt Angle celebrating Kurt Angle's birthday in Triple H's locker room.
Yes.
How any of that makes sense is completely beyond me.
Well, Kurt was kind of hanging with Triple H because of the whole Stephanie tie-in and everything. Yeah. We didn't really mention that too much in the Kurt stuff, but Stephanie was still his business manager. Like you said, she's right. Not here on this night, But she had been still managing Kurt. So I mean, Triple H kind of had this weird love-hate, weird-ass thing.
Yeah, it was kind of like detente.
Yeah. Because and, of yeah, so they're all celebrating in Triple H's locker room.
And Edge and Christian broke out. They wanted to sing, but instead of singing, they wanted to play songs. So they pulled out kazoos on the zoo. And they sung Kurt's theme song. Then they tried to do Triple H's theme song. And Triple H eventually threw
it's
them out.
It's my time. It's my time. And of course, the forgotten one, because we've talked about it before. They did Benoit's song. They did their own song. They did Triple H's song and Kurt's song. But the oft-forgotten one was when they did Crash Holly's song. That was a couple weeks later, actually. That was the last one they did. Yeah, something like that.
I like the Chris Benoit one.
Yeah.
His name is Chris Benoit, and he's very mad. His name is Chris Benoit, and he's very angry.
Yeah, it was that was really that was some of Edge and Christian's best work.
Yeah, they were tremendous.
So this match, pretty much by the book, really 10 minutes.
Well, we didn't even mention our the rest of the team.
Oh, right. Go ahead.
That's right. So we Edge and Christian. We mentioned two.
Do
of them.
It, Rockapella.
Edge and Christian and the Right to Censor on one side, the Hardy Boys and the Forgotten Team here. D-Von and Bubba Ray, the Dudleys, who really. Kind of, they've had kind of a weird year since they lost the straps at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
Kind of floating around, really didn't sniff any. Well, I mean, except for the first TLC at SummerSlam.
Right. They're kind of getting back in the mix now a little bit here.
Yeah, they did.
So, yeah, not too much out of the ordinary. Edge pins Matt with an Edge-O-Matic at 4 minutes. Christian pins D-Von with a Tamikaze. So now the heel team up 4-2. Then Bubba comes back with two consecutive pins over Bull and Edge. Goodfather takes out Bubba. Leaving, what do we got there? Leaving a 2-on-1 scenario.
Jeff against Christian and the Good Father.
And Jeff pins them both within a minute of each other. And then after the match, we get another brawl, and shit goes down. We get some tables and all that stuff. So
yes, yeah, they pull the tables out.
Yep.
Val tries to interfere. Val gets swantoned by Jeff on the table, and then Steven Richards gets powerbombed. Through a Bubba bombed through a table. We've been talking about JR, and you had mentioned this back at I don't know if it was Fully Loaded at SummerSlam. Was the RTC was the whole thing with Steven kind of losing its was it not good that he just constantly was getting his ass pounded?
No, I think at this point it doesn't matter. I mean, I think some of the heat behind the fact that oh, who's gonna be the first one to take him out is kind of gone now. So it's like whatever, open season. I think at this point it's transitioned to him being a manager that will take the hit to save his teams. As opposed to him being the mouthpiece that we're waiting to get his ass handed to him, now he's become like
right,
Jimmy Hart
exactly.
Or something. You know what I mean? Like a guy that's going to take the fall so his champ is going to remain.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's clear that the Right to Censor are really just they're putting them over as the studs of the tag division, but you could tell Edge and Christian are biding their time, and you could tell they're working the Dudleys back in, and it seems like now the Hardys might be the team. Although Jeff gets the win here, so they seem to really be on pace. A lot of teams really getting a lot of shine here, which is cool to see. Like, all four of these teams kind of look good in this.
So would you put Steven Richards above Mr. Fuji and Frenchie Martin on the managers?
Yes. Yes, I would. Thank you.
Yes, I thought so. Not Bobby. It's not Bobby. But definitely better than Frenchie. Okay, so Jeff Hardy, your sole survivor. Let me ask you, do you think that they were looking at Jeff at this point kind of the way that they used to look at Shawn in the Rockers? Jeff was the one that could be the solo guy of this team, or you think they weren't even thinking about that yet? Having Jeff as the sole survivor.
No, I don't know if they were looking at that yet.
Okay.
I don't know if they would have been room for him yet.
Oh, no, I don't I'm kind of thinking the way it was with like Brett in 88. Like eventually here's a guy we could possibly see as a I'm not saying they were going to break him up at that moment. I'm just saying that. Did they think that Jeff could be the guy that could be marketed as the future singles guy? But well, we got a lot of time to talk about that. Okay. Time for our main event. And for the first time in a while, definitely for the first time this year, I believe, the world title match obviously was not last. But the match that is pretty much...
TV Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
The real OG motherfucking Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan update. Newcastle, England, on November 11th, Jim Duggan was in some mishmash six-man with an erection, Chavo and Lash LaRusse versus Lance Storm, Jim Duggan, and Alex Skipper with Major... Oh, what the fuck is this shit? Who cares? November 20th, Hugh Morris and Ming defeated Lance Storm and Jim Duggan in Augusta, Georgia. And that's it for November. Griscola, how you been, bitch?
I've been great, VKM. How was your weekend?
Why is that? Why are you so fucking great? Tell me.
Because I'm talking to you.
Oh, okay, cool.
That's what I thought. You had a good weekend?
Oh, yeah. Time? It was a good time.
Hanging and banging.
Me and Claire, the pussy posse, hitting the town.
How were things in Buffalo Sunday night?
Where?
Buffalo.
I wasn't there.
That's where your pay-per-view was.
I don't know
the power went out then. You didn't get the bill from the Buffalo Power and Electric Company?
The Buffalo Wild Wings. It's one of my favorite restaurants. The bar there is always hopping.
Yes, it is.
Hopping
yes,
with bitches. Is. All right, Griscola, I threw a vote out there.
Uh-huh.
Last time I was on, if you remember.
Yes.
I said I could either do some fan fiction,
mm-hmm.
some 80s or 90s TV, or I could do a little karaoke with Claire.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of settled on this weird little mishmash hybrid.
Okay.
Are you familiar with the hit show Survivor?
Yes, I am.
It's opposite SmackDown on UPN on Thursday nights.
A while ago, yes.
What do you mean?
SmackDown's on Fridays now.
Still on UPN, isn't it? Paramount Network? Anyway, I put a help wanted ad in the paper. I had Claire go out and do that for me. And I found one of the biggest Survivor fans you'll ever meet. I think you may know him. It's this guy out of Detroit, Michigan. His name's Jordan Duncan. Jordan, you're on with us.
I am on.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great, Vince. How are you?
I'm good. So, Criscolo and Place TV Nation, what Jordan and I have done, we put together a pilot episode and a series episode of our own season of Survivor, Place to Be Nation, WWF style.
Wow, I'm fascinated by this.
All right. I don't care. I don't really give a shit what you have to say. I'm here to deliver the material. That's right, Duncan. Laughing his stupid face. All right. All right. Let's hit the theme music, Duncan. You ready?
I'm ready. Survivor.
Sounds like Tiger Ali singing.
Shut up!
Quiet!
All right, Duncan, go ahead.
All right, on this season of Survivor, 16 players are split up into teams where they compete for the title of sole survivor. First, I will introduce the teams. The first team is Mark's Trump Boats, Mark Claire, Donald Trump, and Tugboat. The next team is the Alliterative Alliance, Anthony Armento, Ted Turner, and Kevin Kelly.
Nails!
Then, team Place to Be, Michael Vincent, Jay Hinchey, and Scott Criscolo.
What a team.
The next team, Parvini's Bikinis. Parv, Mike McGurk, and the sweet, sweet Sapphire. One more team, the powers that be, Hulk Hogan, Triple H, and Dixie Carter. And Matt Rotello was not assigned to a team, but he still has the second highest total combined weight. All right, at our first challenge, it's an endurance challenge. Players must stand on a post in the ocean until one entire team has been eliminated. That team will head to Tribal Council in a callback to Survivor of the Amazon, where Jenna Maraska took off her clothes for peanut butter and chocolate. Matt Rotella strips for a bag of Funyuns. Upon seeing this, Mark Claire, Donald Trump, and Tugboat all immediately quit the game and proceed to shove their eyes into the fire, hoping forever to get that image out of their eyes, but it has forever been burned into their memories. One team already out of the game. What do you think, Scott?
Do it, bitch! Mark Claire! You're fired! Donald Trump, you're fired! Tugboat, you're fired!
Moving right along! Since the challenge requires you to be still and not mobile, Hulk Hogan wins immunity with ease, going to Tribal Council and finishing last place, the Alliterative Alliance. So Vince, Anthony Armento, Ted Turner, and Kevin Kelly are up for elimination. Who is voted out?
Anthony Armento, your GPS broke and you drove your stupid ass right off the island. You're fired!
He's fired. We're down to 12 players. Our second immunity challenge requires teams to untie knots that give you puzzle pieces. When put together, the puzzle gives you a combination to a lock on a box. Inside the box is a flag. First four teams to unlock their flag wins immunity. It's a close battle, but eventually Team P2B is eliminated by disqualification when Michael Vincent sets fire to the lock.
No!
Yes! He offers to make it up to his team by selling them all DVD cases for $2.99 apiece when the game is over. Team P2B headed to Tribal Council. Vincent, Jay Hinchy, or Scott will be voted out. Who's gone, Vince?
Michael Vincent, stop bootlegging my shit, you son of a bitch. I have an offer for you. $3 per ass whipping. You're fired.
I like the way this is going. Our next challenge is a reward challenge, which is again won by Team Place to Be. Their reward, a podcast review of Barely Legal 97 the very day after Michael Vincent was eliminated.
Irony!
At its finest. The immunity challenge is a simple foot race around the island. It is announced that the two tribes of two will now merge, so the Alliterative Alliance and Team Place to Be are now a squad of four. The challenge is neck and neck most of the way, but the newly formed tribe of four falls behind when Scott Criscolo and Kevin Kelly get into a shouting match over who Justin Rosero likes more. Tears are shed, and Jay Hinchy thinks it's all pretty good.
My man.
The hybrid tribe of four head to Tribal Council, where someone will be voted out, but not Scott Criscolo. He reveals a hidden immunity idol, which is a coconut carved into the likeness of Richard Belding. So he can't be voted out. So Vince, who's going home? Will it be Ted Turner, Kevin Kelly, or Jay Hinchy?
Well, Turner, I kept you around long enough to carry my bags and shine my shoes, but I'm tired of abusing you. Back to Atlanta with your homeboy, Chad Campbell. Ted Turner, you're fired!
Boom! Suck it. Our next challenge is for both reward and immunity. The team that finishes first gets comfort. The losing team will go to Tribal Council. The teams have 1 hour to construct a booth in which they will attempt to sell popsicles to native islanders. Parvini's bikinis use their sex appeal to gain the win and are rewarded with giant Gonzalez bodysuits to keep them warm at night.
Van Ness, Mr. Duncans.
Thank you. Wow, he's here too. All right. It appears that Rotella loses the challenge after eating all his popsicles, but he does manage to sell one, which is more than the powers that be. When asked why they did so poorly, Hogan and Triple H both reply, they aren't selling anything for these Samoans. So they will go to Tribal Council. Who goes home? Dixie, Hulk Hogan, or Triple H?
I already banged that stupid bitch Dixie under the palm tree and then sent her packing back to Nashville. Dixie Carter, you're fired. Criscolo, who's the favorite remaining here?
Triple H.
Not even yourself. That's true dedication. That's true love.
Not bad. The next challenge is a survivor favorite. It's called the Loved Ones Visit. Each player has a loved one visit them. Dusty Rhodes visits the Sweet Sapphire.
That's right, baby.
Stephanie McMahon visits Triple H while a bitter, tear-filled Scott watches in the distance. Matt Rotella is visited by the manager of Arby's from his hometown. Atlanta Braves star Chipper Jones visits the star-struck Jay Hinchy. Chad Campbell comes to visit Parv. Hulk Hogan visits himself. Mike McGurk is surprised by the Fink. And then chaos ensues as Justin Rosero strides onto the island and both Kevin and Scott get into a fist fight, claiming he's there to see them. A disgusted Rosero leaves the island and Scott and Kevin must play the challenge together. It's a simple obstacle course won again by Parv's team, and Team Plays to Be loses again and heads back to Tribal Council. Vince, it's either Kevin Kelly, Scott Criscolo, or Jay Hinchy. Who's going home?
Kevin Kelly? Did I fire that stupid turd one time before?
Probably more than once.
Wrap his ass in his orange jumpsuit and send him the fuck back to the Indies. You got a shitty look for TV, Kevin Kelly. Go fuck yourself. You're out of here, bitch. You're fired.
That's exactly what I wanted to hear. With the game narrowing down, all the players are on edge.
And Christian.
Not Edge the Wrestler. Alliances are forming. Rivalries are heating up.
I already beat the Alliance.
That's true. Team Parv holds the power as the only full team left as they head into the challenge. It's a game of balance as teams must stack bricks high enough to reach their tribe flag. Parvini's bikinis should be a lock with that extra person. But Sweet Sapphire is nowhere to be found. Hacksaw Jim Duggan bursts onto the scene to announce he's still looking for her, but the challenge must go on. Team Parv is too distracted by their missing partner, and they lose. Since Sapphire is missing, two people go to tribal. So who's going home, Vince? Is it Mike McGurk? Or is it Parv?
Well, I can't back any woman who lost a battle with Sapphire in any way, and she cannot be taken seriously, and she's a big loose slut. Mike McGurk, back to the trailer park. You're fired.
I can't say I blame you for any of those reasons. Immediately after the challenge and heading back to camp, they see the shelter is a-rockin', and they come a-knockin'. Who's inside? Sweet Sapphire has been found in the arms of Jay Hinchy. Hinchy again says, it's not bad. We head to our next challenge, which is the first swimming challenge of the season. Rattel is off to a quick start. He appears to have it won, but he hits a shock wall.
No!
He regroups and finishes just before the powers that be and team place to be. Both teams head to tribal council. Who will be voted out? It's going to be Hogan, Hinchy, Triple H, or Scott.
I think it's pretty obvious that Hogan's worn out his welcome. He's too old to survive. He's hobbling around like a dinosaur. Wait, what? What's that? He wants to come back for WrestleMania? All right, Hogan's staying. Wait, what? He just signed with TNA? All right, Hogan, you're fired.
Hit the bricks, Hogan. Back at the camp, Scott reveals another idol, only this one is not for immunity. It is literally an idol carved in the likeness of Triple H. Triple H is flattered, slightly terrified, and forms an alliance with Scott Criscolo. At our next challenge, let's just be real about it. A horrible injury occurs. Red water is everywhere. Parv's team is headed to tribal. Either Parv or Sapphire is going home. Who's it going to be?
Parv, I hate you. I hate British people, and I hate the AWA. I hate your accent. I hate your face and your podcast. And I hate your love child, Chad Campbell. You're fired.
Wow. We have reached the final five. Scott, you're still in the game. What do you think?
I know that John Gonzalez didn't need to give a suit to Matt Rotella because
it's an individual game, and the challenge involves eating disgusting foods. Everyone assumes Rotella has it wrapped up, but Sapphire manages to eat her weight in uncooked chicken. She is safe at Tribal Council, which means one of these four men will be eliminated. Scott Criscolo, Jay Hinchy, Triple H, or Matt Rotella. Who's it going to be?
Jay Hinchy, you're one of my biggest fans and admirers. I love you for all the support you give my promotion in the face of those stupid internet smarks that think they know everything. You always defend me and my product. It kills me to do this. But fuck you and your Atlanta Braves, you hillbilly. You're fired.
Wow. With just one challenge left before the final three, Triple H and Scott make a pact to work together to get to the final. Scott's dream has come true. The challenge is an obstacle course. And just before finishing together, Triple H hits Scott with a pedigree, winning immunity for himself. However, Scott is too aroused to be angry. Triple H ensures Scott he still has his back. So who's getting voted out? Will it be Scott, Rotella, or sweet Sapphire?
What's that, Hunter? All right. Scott Criscolo, you're fired! Ha ha!
Stabbed in the back. Triple H laughs as Scott cries, and we have our final three. Who will win? Will it be the cerebral assassin, Triple H, the silverback Matt Rotella, or the sweet brown sugar known as Sapphire? Vince, it's up to you.
Triple H, the gay, my son-in-law. Swerve, bitch, you're out of here too. Nobody takes my promotion. I'm going to rule forever. Me and Satan will be sitting on the throne of Earth while you're burning in hell with your lover, Scott Criscolo. You can both go the fuck back to Canada and get married. You're out of here, bitches.
We are down to two. Sweet Sapphire and Maniac Matt Rotella. Who's got it, Vince?
Sweet Sapphire, my little sugar shaker, my greatest love. I need you to stay in one piece and make it home intact. So I reluctantly vote you off. Sapphire, you're fired. Matt Rotella, you win because you blend in with all these other animals and freaks, and the loot winner of the show has to stay on the island forever. Good luck, asshole. We're out of here. Good job, Duncan. Criscolo, go fuck yourself, you loser. See you next week. So I fucked him, it wasn't nothing. He wanted me to suck him, but I didn't. I ain't frontin'. The sex was wet like a four-stroke creep. I jumped on the dick, wrote his ass to sleep. He called next week, asking why I ain't beep him. That was intense. I think you had it.
I need a moment. I can't believe I was stabbed. Of all the defenses that I've made on the internet for you, when everyone thought you married into your business, that your career was a sham, who was always there for you? Not Jay Hinchy. Shirt off! I'll get you, Vince. I'll get you. All right, I'm good. All right. Time now for our main event. Incidentally, I don't think Matt Rotella ever needs a Giant Gonzalez suit. Pretty much this is permanent. All right. Turn back the clock, once again, to the 1999 Survivor Series, when the mysterious Crown Vic ran over Steve Austin. Put him on the shelf for 10 months. 10 months later, we find out that it was Rikishi who was driving the car, but clearly he probably was told he was too stupid to do it by himself. There was an accomplice, a mastermind, if you will.
Ugh. All right.
Now, the 10 I will try and say it with a more neutral voice because you can't.
Well, on the 10-26 SmackDown, Steve Austin was assaulted backstage by a mystery assailant.
Mm-hmm.
Recovered in time to brawl with Rikishi to close out the show. And on the 11-2 SmackDown, Rock confronted Steve Austin and told him he had nothing to do with running him over. Austin said he only trusts himself. DTA, midgets. Rikishi then appeared and said that because The Rock's merchandise sales were dropping, Rock came to him and asked him to run Austin down. Rock denied it and told Austin that everything he has ever done was right to Austin's face. Austin dropped Rock with a stunner, and Rock retaliated with a rock bottom. On 11-6, it all came out. In the main event of the show, Austin teamed with Triple H to take on Angle and Rikishi. Rock was originally slated to be Austin's partner, but was injured prior to the match. A few minutes in, Triple H pasted Austin with a sledgehammer and revealed that he was behind Rikishi's hit and run the year before, because he had the most to gain with Austin on the shelf. And I thought this actually... I'm torn on this, because I thought it actually tied together fairly well with the whole... I mean, it really made sense. Triple H had the most to gain from all this, and he did. He benefited the most. As, you know, he took over the promotion, he married into to the ownership and everything else. So that part made sense. The things that bugged me were Rikishi kind of falls in line now to just being a minion, basically, instead of anything legit.
Right.
Triple H's face turn was working well. And now he's just back to being a heel again. Like, I feel like a lot of the nuance that was there is just gone, and now he's just back to being the heel.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like his character was pretty interesting. And I feel like they could have made somebody else. You know, like, I feel like Triple H didn't need this. Now, here's my storyline I wanted to talk about earlier, because I really want to get your thoughts if you like this one.
Mm-hmm.
So, instead of Hunter coming out and being proud of what he did, what if he had kind of had a change of heart since, like, he's still the guy that commissioned Rikishi, but since he's been kind of getting cheered by the fans and kind of becoming buddies with Austin and Rock a little bit and Foley, he kind of likes it and doesn't want it to come out. And then Rikishi outs him as the one. And now Hunter's in this weird spot where it killed all his cred as a face. Rikishi's a bigger asshole and he feels bad about it now. He's kind of conflicted. He doesn't know what to do. He's pissed off because he was finally being accepted. And, you know, it's like a different kind of turn. And it adds a little bit of depth instead of just, I did it to you, I'm the game, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that could have had any legs?
Absolutely. I love that. That would have been awesome. It would have been really deep. It would have been good for, at that time, for a storyline. I think it would have made Triple H one of the most complex characters on the roster, and I think he would have pulled it off well.
Oh, he definitely would have, because he was good at this stretch, and he had the tweener thing down. I think it really could have helped him not just fall back into the same role, and it could have really made Rikishi more of a mastermind. And then you could even bring someone else in,
mm-hmm,
if you want to give Rikishi another mastermind to someone else that was behind this. And I just like the idea of him outing Hunter. It's almost like a movie, you know, like this guy was a dick before, and then he kind of becomes nice, and then something leaks out that he did something stupid. You know, it's like,
mm-hmm,
I don't know. I feel like it could have had a lot more depth than it did, because I liked him in that little tweener role. I thought it was good, him buddying up with Foley and kind of getting cheered. And I thought they could have done more with it.
I agree. I think they thought it was getting too complex, and they just wanted something straight up.
Yeah.
But I think that would have been fantastic. I kind of like that. I think it would have made Triple H a very complex character that I think fans, good wrestling fans, would have enjoyed. And I think it would have made the storyline very real,
mm-hmm,
like real guilt, which is something you don't see a lot of. You rarely see any wrestlers feel guilt.
Right. I think that could have really been a big part of it.
I agree. Now, going totally off the rails, I was thinking today, now, if you were going to have a straight up guy just be the guy who who did it. I have an even better person than Triple H.
Austin did it to himself.
Exactly. He jumped in front of his own car. No. A guy that could have kind of, you know what, JR? He could have actually, it could have stayed this kind of, you could have skipped Rikishi altogether. Had Triple H be in the Rikishi role, this would have pushed him even more into a baby face. And if he was in the right frame of mind, you know, would have been the perfect guy to be in that slot as the mastermind. He's not on the roster right now. He's not on camera much. But he'd have been the perfect guy.
Raven?
Exactly. Just incredible. No. I think the one guy that would have made this storyline real believable, you get rid of Rikishi. You don't even put him in the spot. You put Triple H in the Rikishi spot.
Come on, I'm at the edge of my seat.
Sean. Because who's the other guy?
Well, let me ask you this, though. Sean can't wrestle. What's the end game? They just use him to get Rikishi over?
Exactly. And you keep Triple H in this conflicted...
Right.
You can kind of take your idea and my idea and morph it into one.
Yeah, you could.
Because Sean, you can stick in anything, and people believe it. Because who had the most... Triple H had the most to gain with Austin gone, but who had the most to lose with Austin there? Go back 2.5 years.
Yep.
You beat me, and I've been gone ever since. And you took my spot.
That's my spot. I like it.
So
I think they both definitely, like you said, I think there could be some kind of level of hybrid that could have worked in there.
Yeah.
Maybe Sean, it makes them even bigger dick if he's the one that turns on Triple H and outs him. I just like that idea of him getting outed instead of taking credit.
Credit. Makes it so plain.
Right. It was. And then it was just like, and he's good in the role. And I like the whole thing with him and the Radicals. I thought that worked well. And, you know, them as his, you know, assassins. But it's just, I feel like there was so much more. And I feel like it all started with him beating Kurt at Unforgiven and has a snowball to here.
Mm-hmm.
Where they could have really done something different with him. And instead, we get the same old kind of heel Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't really had him and Austin feud yet, right?
Well, I mean, they had the one match at No Mercy 99.
Right, but they haven't really
feuded.
That
was just a four-week thing. Yeah, that was nothing.
So, I mean, I guess they were due for a feud. I don't know. I think you could have strung it a little bit longer. The match itself is fine. It's just a brawl. Very similar to the one with Rikishi. And then the ending is awful. Hunter gets in a car. Austin raises it up in a forklift, tips it, and the car slams into the ground, and it looks like Hunter should be dead. And
really.
Yeah, there's a lot of emotion. The crowd's into it. I think we should have just had a better finish. I don't think we needed to kill Triple H, and it was just stupid. It was something you would have expected when Vince Russo was there. It just makes no sense at all, especially when we get to the next couple nights of what follows.
Yeah.
It was just stupid. It was a dumb ending. And it sucks because the show's actually a little bit better than I remember being, mainly because of the heat and some of the angles that happen in it. There's no real great match on the show. I'd say Rock Rikishi's probably the best match.
Yeah.
But the heat's there, and there's, you know, some interesting parts to it.
But
I feel like with a better finish to this main event, you could have maybe remembered this a little more fondly.
Right. Yeah, I think so too. Incidentally, in continuing the journey of entrance themes for this show, Triple H does not have his straight-up theme, which I loved. And now he has this weird kind of adjusted hybrid version, which starts off kind of as his song, but then it gets much heavier.
Right, yes. It's a combo of a couple of songs, and it'll flesh out over the weeks.
It'll flesh out over the weeks. He'll have it through the end of the year, and then 2001 he gets a song that you know very well. I didn't really hate the match, per se. The match itself wasn't horrible as a standalone, but the ending was dumb. I mean, he should be dead. He should be dead. I mean, it's pretty simple.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's
Yay, awful. The feud's over. He's dead. I mean, it's like, I mean, the car's flat. He should have a broken neck. You know, it was ridiculous.
It's awful.
That was Attitude Era, way too much disbelief to suspend.
Yeah, I don't think we even saw anything that bad in the Russo era.
You know,
it was just, yeah, it was bad.
Ridiculous.
Was bad. So, all right. Overall, Scott, what did you think of this one?
I'm very 50-50, but again, watching it again today, I lean a little bit toward better than C+.
Yeah, I agree. Maybe, it was actually a little bit better.
Minus, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit better than I had remembered it being. Yeah. I think I had always kind of let that main event and the Triple H heel turn really kind of... And the fact that Taker was in that title match, I think those kind of things always kind of soured me. But looking back, it wasn't nearly as bad as I had remembered it.
Yeah, no, just that ending is just so stupid.
I mean, when you look at the catalog of 2000, though, it's way down there.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, this is as a show itself, it's not unwatchable. But if you look at the other, if you look at the other three of the big four, or I guess big five still. This one is in the lower level. I mean, is it worse than SummerSlam? Yes.
Oh yeah. I mean, King of the Ring.
Is it worse than 16?
Yes. I think King of the Ring is the only show where 16 had the ladder match. I mean, that alone makes it better than this.
It's definitely worse than the Rumble.
Oh yeah. I think King of the Ring is the only show in the entire year worse than this one. I don't think it's even close. So, all right, there is your review of Survivor Series 2000. No feedback tonight. We ran a little bit long, thanks to the impromptu reality show we had.
Yeah.
Tomorrow night, Wednesday, although it might not be posted until Thursday, we'll keep you posted on that, but a little something, a little treat involving lists and other things. Hopefully you guys will like it.
Be a lot of fun.
Next Monday, we'll be back with our review of Armageddon 2000. We'll wrap up the year. And next Wednesday, Kevin Kelly's here to put a bow on it.
Woohoo!
So we'll wrap up 2000 in style.
Yeah!
And then, is the next week Halloween?
Monday's
just flying by, baby, though.
No, next week. No, Halloween is in 2 weeks.
All right, so we got another full week before.
We got another. Next week's the 16th. It's almost 3 weeks away.
Okay, I'm just trying to think when I'm gonna start doing the Halloween themes.
Yeah, no, podcast. We got almost the whole month.
So next week we're crazy. Okay.
Yeah, we got plenty of weeks left.
All right, everyone, we'll be back later this week with a little treat for you. Until then, that's Scott. I'm Justin. Take care. We'll talk to you later.
I think it's the first thing that recalls everyone.
It belongs to Dr. Moreau's. Jeffrey Goldblum.
Like he's in the trees. Hello, Luigi.
Of my broken heart, and I've spent so many nights just feeling sorry for myself. I used to cry, but now I hold my head up high, and you see me with somebody new. I'm not that stupid little person still in love with you. And so you thought you'd just drop by and you expect me to be free, but now I'm saving all my loving for someone who's loving me. Oh, now go walk out the door, just turn around. Now you're not welcome anymore. Weren't you the one who tried to break me with desire? Did you think I'd crumble? Did you think I'd lay down and die? Oh, now I will survive. Yeah, as long as I know how to love, I know I'll be alive. I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love to give. I will survive. I will survive.